Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Desires are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharmas are boundless. I vow to master them. The Buddha's way is incomparable. I vow to attain it. Welcome, everyone. So if any of you were here last year when Chungan Sunim was visiting with us, you may recognize this book, 208 Koans. If you did any koan practice with him, he would have probably used this book. So I would like to share one with you. A lot of these koans are famous and translated into different languages: Chinese, Korean, Japanese. So the names of the characters may look different, but they're referring to the same master. Who is that? Where's that master? Was he someone from 1,000 years ago? This master is as far as the tip of your nose. Emperor Yang Muji requested great teacher Bu Jie Sa to expound the Diamond Sutra. The great teacher climbed onto the high rostrum, shook the desk once, and then got down off the seat. Emperor Yang Muji was astonished. Master Jie Gong asked him, "Does your majesty understand?" Emperor said, "No, I do not understand. The great teacher, Bu Da Sa, has finished expounding the sutra," Master Jie Gong said. So here's some questions about that story. Why did the great teacher, Bu Da Sa, shake his desk once? Emperor Yang Muji said, "I don't understand. What does this mean?" Master Jie Gong said, "The great teacher, Bu Da Sa, has finished expounding the sutra. What does this mean?" So the commentary goes like this: "Do you see? Do you hear? The sun, the moon, the stars, the trees, and the rivers are already teaching us the Diamond Sutra. If you open your mouth, you lose the Diamond Sutra's true meaning. Just seeing, just hearing, just smelling is better than the Diamond Sutra. The rooster crows, cock-a-doodle-doo. The dog barks, woof-woof. Is that the Diamond Sutra or not? Don't check. Put it down. What are you doing now? Just do it." So, what do you say? Comments, questions? Hi, Michael.
Hi. Hi, Will. How are you?
Good.
All the koans seem to be the same lesson. And it's basically just don't ask questions. That's really kind of what I've perceived. You know, it seems like digging deeper is almost antithetical to what is being sought after.
When you say don't ask questions, what do you mean?
Don't try to get a conscious answer. There seems to be no answer for this stuff. There's no need for an answer.
So thinking creates suffering from this and that. If you don't make something out of it, when you eat when you're hungry, you sleep when you're tired, and you answer the koan appropriately, then you're showing your true nature. When you make it up for whatever reason you are creating, you're wrong. You're missing the point. So koans are just expedient means to understand where our mistake is. Sometimes, you know, it takes a long, long time to solve a koan. Sometimes people stay with the same one for many, many years. But that's okay. There is no reason not to. There is no reason to.
Are they ever really solved? They're not really. They're not meant to be solved.
I think the master in this case, when he shook the desk, he expounded the Diamond Sutra. That was an answer. That was a correct answer to the question, would you please expound on the Diamond Sutra? He did. Just like sometimes, cut is the right answer. Sometimes just drinking the tea, laying down and sleeping, washing the dishes is the answer.
When is it time to try to dig deeper?
Dig deeper? Where are you digging a hole to?
Well, it does seem that certain people are preternaturally inclined to be able to access these lessons, truly to truly feel them. Other people think we have to, such as myself, think we have to go through a kind of a roundabout to dig deeper to get to something.
Okay.
So I guess my question is kind of a fruitless endeavor for some people to really sit with these cones.
Well, in order to see clearly, in order to have insight into whatever it is you're looking at or doing, you have to be clear. So to be clear means not to have clouds obstructing the sunlight. And those clouds are our delusive thinking, our deluded thinking. So when you're relying on a false narrative about reality, then you know, you're causing suffering for yourself and others. So the whole purpose of waking up, or you could say digging deeper if you want, digging deeper meaning letting go of, not being attached to your idea of what is going on, so that you could see what is actually going on. It can get very misguided, like the three treasures, or the great patriarch, or Buddha. You know, the reason there's a saying that says, if you see Buddha, kill him, it's all your own mind. That's the only place you can save anyone, the only place you can wake up. You can't go to some Buddha somewhere else. The Buddha is right there. Right there. So the three treasures, they're not out there. The Sangha isn't this refuge unless you have it. If you have an idea of what the Sangha is, and it doesn't live up to your expectations, then the Sangha can be a very difficult place to hang out. Like family is like that. So, you know, we expect our spouse to behave a certain way, and then what happens? When I'm washing the dishes and a spoon falls on the floor, do I get mad at the spoon because I'd rather be somewhere else? Having ease, having a free mind to be, do whatever you want, anytime, anywhere. You have to drop it. And that's what koans are there to help you do. To drop your ideas of what's going on here. Or try to interpret intellectually, understand something. When the understanding comes from your whole being, it's already there. So wisdom isn't something that you acquire. Wisdom is something that is already there. Buddha nature is already there. Your original nature is already there. There's no place to go to find it other than right here.
My limited understanding of the Diamond Sutra is that it's about impermanence. And nothing is ever the same because it's constantly changing. And I have to be able to appreciate and take in what's going on within me and without me. And I'll quote Lennon and McCartney, the love you take is equal to the love you make.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
So Michael, it was a while back, but I remember one of the most interesting things you said when we were discussing on a similar thread about what is this thing that we're seeking and trying to get our head around. And you described it, well, is it like when you'd have the, I guess it's the like the Rorschach test or whatever. It's like, is it two people talking or is it a vase? You know, that kind of transition moment where you suddenly see the whole thing. And I thought, is that it? Or is that a metaphor for what we're talking about here? And that it's always there, but until you see it, you're striving and striving and striving, and then you get it. And it's like, Shazam, it was always there. And it's not a thing that you can figure out the answer to. It's not an equation or something you solve. It's just something that comes into awareness for you. And then when it does, it's like, wow, it's always been there. Yeah, wow, this is, but I thought that suggestion you had, that was like, yeah, that could be a really powerful metaphor for what it is that we're seeking here.
Yeah, that's good, but I don't remember saying it. But you know, it's funny because there are days that I sit down, and you've even said this, Will, where you sit down and just it's just not happening. Like your mind is just going. You have to constantly reset, constantly reset. I mean, I know that's the essence of coming back. That's the practice. But there are times when I'm able to, like when I'm able to just kind of hit a certain point where it's almost like a. Another way to describe it is like, it's like you ever be on a treadmill and you step off for a second and you go like, oh, I got to get back on there, and you got to kind of get momentum immediately. There's times when I'm almost like I'm going back in and I just go into it and I'm able to kind of almost like, it feels like I'm balancing on a razor line, and there's comfort in that. And that's the only way to describe it. Like, it's like, I'm like, yes, I could fall off, but it's like this, I'm finding comfort in the balance at this moment. I know it's not going to last forever, but it's this. And that's the only way to describe what I think you're talking about.
And what I was thinking about when you were talking, Dan, was that phrase, an aha moment.
Yeah.
And like even in recovery, we talk about spiritual awakening, and that comes as a result of doing all this work on yourself and on your relationships, on the world around you, getting in sync, for lack of a better term, and getting kind of an intuitive understanding of how you go through life. You know, what are you bumping into, and what are you how well are you able to adapt to what's going on around you, and, you know, bring something positive to every relationship, every situation you're in, rather than trying to suck something out of it.
Back to my analogy of the clouds. So it's always there. The sun is always there. It's just temporarily you don't see it. So last week, I remember I talked about the three pillars: great faith, great courage, great question. So the great question is like, what is this? You know, what's here? What is here? And great faith means trusting in your own Buddha nature, your own nature, that when things are not going well, when things are feel like you're being tossed around on the waves. You trust in the deep nature that is holding it all together. That's who you really are. So that, along with, you know, the diligence, the fortitude to continue with your practice, keep going, and, you know, the great question, what is this right now? What is this? And that's where we started tonight with that koan. Those questions at the end of the koan. We're really saying, so what does this mean? What is this? And that's why we sit. That's why we get, you know, we keep letting go. We keep letting go of our attachments. We keep acknowledging and recognizing our delusive thinking. You know, we see our backpack that we're carrying with us, with all that stuff that we've been holding on to so dearly that we don't need. I mean, it's a continuous thing. It never stops, I don't think. I mean, at least for me, it hasn't yet, except in one way. You can be free of it and still experience it. My back hurts. Getting back to my analogy of dropping the spoon. Am I going to be mad at myself because my back hurts? You see, letting go is freedom. What are we letting go of? Just our deluded view so that we can see how things actually are. And then there's the freedom and the intuition, the insight to make different choices that get us better results. So insight comes from letting go, not holding on to our ideas of how things are. And so we can see how they actually are. And then the choices we make come from a place of wisdom instead of the three poisons, for example, greed, anger, delusion. Anything else?
Well, one of the difficult things for me to remember is that I'm frequently wrong. I get much too invested in being right. And that clouds my judgment.
You know, the Bodhisattva path is one of saving all sentient beings. What comes to my mind is compassion and a loving nature and, you know, ethical conduct, things that we practice in order to get more clear. You're better off having good thoughts than bad thoughts, right? But they're still just thoughts. But still, as we're struggling with trying to understand what's happening here, you know, our fears, our anxieties, the anger, the resentments, all the different things that they were holding on to about our lives. And for some, for good reason, we've been hurt or we've hurt others. So there's work to be done. But I think the focus should really be being compassionate towards oneself so that you can be compassionate to others. There's no such thing as us individuals here. This is just an idea. There's no duality, actually. There's no self to save, actually. This is all part of our creation. So underneath it all is this web of connectivity that is everywhere and everything, and you're not separate from it ever. Waking up is the whole universe. Not just your little self. It's the totality. It's everything. And yet, it's just the little self, eating when you're hungry, sleeping when you're tired, drinking tea, having relationships, all the rest of it.
I remember there's a story I read about Zen. One of the person asked the Zen master, what do you gain through meditation? And he said, I did not gain anything, but I lose my anger. I lose my wandering. And the question was like, oh, so how do you do that? And he said, when I'm sleepy, I go to sleep. When I'm hungry, I go to eat. And it's a symbol like that. Enlightenment is just simple. It shouldn't be hard.
Thank you. That's a good story. Yeah.
I wanted to share with all of you, I feel like there's always these little serendipitous moments when I join these group meetings and how they relate to my life. But I recently started PTSD therapy for my time in the military. And one of the things that the psychologist I'm working with said is that we're going to break down your ego. And I was kind of like, my ego, I don't think I really have a big ego. And she said, most people don't, but it's that persona of yourself that you believe that you are. And we're going to get rid of that and see who you really are, the good, the bad, the ugly. And it's kind of like the clouds and the sun and the like, all right, let's see it all. Because in the end, is any of it really true at all? And I'm like, okay, I'm kind of scared to start this therapy now, but at the same time, I'm like, well, I need to, and it's what I'm doing in part of my practice too. So I think it'll help having this, but also having that from that side of it and integrating it.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I spent several years in therapy, and it was very useful. It actually helped my practice. Meditation is a really wonderful way to get to know yourself. Keep doing it.
Will, have you done a lot of reading about Stoicism? Stoics? There seems to be a lot of crossover.
I don't know. I haven't read a lot about them. I know sort of vaguely. Who they are and all that, but I've never really been drawn to studying. Why do you ask that? What?
Same thing. I have a kind of a vague knowledge about, you know, Marcus Aurelius and Seneca, and just the idea that you kind of accept things as is. You don't let your mind complicate things. And it just seems to be a lot of crossover, Buddhist and Stoics crossover. And I was just wondering if you've ever done any kind of, I was hoping to actually get some deep reading in.
Yeah, well, do it, you know, keep reading it. But I don't know much more. And the only thing I that came to me just now while you were talking about it was the unique thing that we have in our practice in traditional Zen practice is Buddha nature, experiencing directly, not relying on words and sutras and the direct experience of one's own mind and one's own nature. So that's something kind of unique to the practice of Buddhism generally, but especially in Zen, because like when you take certain aspects of the practice of Buddhism out of its core, like mindfulness practice, for example, and you separate it from the foundational understanding, then it's taken a vacation. It's not really diving very deeply into your true nature. Something is still missing. Not that you can't get there through just mindfulness practice, but I think it's important to be reminded that you have an original nature, Buddha nature, and that that's what it is you're discovering, and not just learning how to be present, you know, to this and that. You know, awakening, we talk about awakening and enlightenment. That's what we're doing. You know, we're solving the great problem of birth and death before we die. So we're not just learning how to be calm. We're we're understanding the nature of our lives and what it means. So we can share that wisdom with others and be bodhisattvas. The other beautiful thing about understanding Buddha nature, because everyone has it, it's not missing from anyone. I think light attracts light. A good-natured person attracts that quality in others, just like a bad-natured person might attract bad-natured qualities. And we have choices to make about how we act and how we are. And when we can make those choices from a place of wisdom and understanding rather than just acting out. So I don't know if Stoicism has that.
Interesting. I did read, Michael, one piece on it, one discussion around that, and I can't remember which of the Stoics it was, but they used this as an example, and it was comparing Stoicism as a philosophy to Zen. And the Stoic was told one day that his son had died, and he was unmoved. And he said, "I knew my son was going to die someday." And the point of the text was, well, this is okay, but this is complete unemotional involvement. This is completely separating from this, from the moment. Whereas in Zen, of course, we are fully engaged, or we try to be, with everything we're doing at that time. It's the present. And so that was perceived as even, you are engaged, you are emotional, and that's fine, but you're not attached, as opposed to the Stoic, which was to be unmoved by the events that were swirling around. So I thought that was kind of an interesting sort of take on it.
Yeah, very good.
That's a big difference. Yeah. I think I heard that Spock, the character Spock, was based off of the Stoics' teachings. He was supposed to be like a Stoic, completely unmoved and almost like disconnected from everything. Mm-hmm.
Lots of people who come to Zen think that Zen is like that, but Zen is true intimacy.
A dichotomy that helps me is conscious contact with everyone and everything around me versus conscious separation, where that's usually motivated by ego and fear, and my mind separates me from everyone and everything. And that's all a fallacy, because I'm not separate. That's just when my monkey mind.
Good discussion tonight. Thank you so much. If there's not anything else, I wish you all a good evening, and I will see you next time.